something happened, yeah. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. Take your time, we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Hello, I'm Debbie Mackey.
And I'm Alan Mackey.
And we are your hosts on Left of Liberal, a program and a Facebook page we've created. Look for the White Peace Poppy. It's called Left of Liberal with hosts Alan and Debbie Mackey. We have a phone number, 512-517-2708, and an email of leftofliberal@outlook.com.
One of the main reasons we have undertaken doing this program, Left of Liberal, is because we feel very strongly peace and disarmament are central to most working class issues and form the basis for pulling together a massive, broad-based, all-people's front comprising liberals, progressives, and leftists, and many other people, irrespective of class, but the left oriented towards working class issues focused on anti-imperialism is going to be the catalyst in educating and organizing this all people's united front for peace and disarmament, for equality and social and economic justice, with socialism on the table now, not later. And we hope that, you know, we'll be inspiring people to sit around in their living rooms, around their kitchen tables, in their union halls, in church basements, and to talk about the issues of the day, because working people have been far too timid in bringing forward their ideas into the marketplace of ideas, the public square. And until working people, begin to speak out more vigorously on the issues that are affecting our lives, you know, we've got a bunch of rich people, billionaires and millionaires, people like Donald Trump, that are saying that they speak for us, and they don't. And we all know these people don't speak for us. So with that, we'll get on with our program. And
yeah, we'll talk about a little bit about some current events. You wanted to say something about Iran? What's happening in Iran?
Yeah, Iran is it's a very dangerous situation that we're going into with Iran. We've got a president in Donald Trump who's very arrogant and uses the worst kind of national chauvinism and jingoism to try and deal with peoples in other countries. And the situation in Iran is deteriorating very quickly. And, if it keeps deteriorating, we're going to have a terrible war. And that war is not going to be limited to a war between Iran and the United States. It's going to involve many other countries, and it's going to be the results are going to be horrendous. You know, we're looking at the possibility of World War III and nuclear war. And, why Trump isn't getting along with any of these other countries. He's blaming other countries for all of our problems. He's saying that all these other countries are doing this and that to us, when in fact it's the United States causing problems all over the world. And we've got to begin to organize a strong peace in this country to put an end to this.
And we also have our guest, Evan Nola. She's a blogger and an engaged citizen. She's also a political and a social activist on here with us. Are you on here, Devin?
I am. Hi. Good evening. How are you?
Hi. Do you have anything to say about Iran?
I think, Alan pretty much covered it. It's a very, very dangerous situation. And, I don't... it's probably a given to say that Iran is not Iraq. This is a very large country with a legitimate military, and they have a lot of allies. And it's a very, very dangerous game that we're playing.
Yeah, and also, what's going on with Puerto Rico?
In Puerto Rico, for the last week or so, there's been huge demonstrations. And the people are trying to oust a very crooked and corrupt government, not unlike the government of Donald Trump right here in our own country. And Trump is responsible for a lot of the problems in Puerto Rico today. And the United States has been responsible for a lot of the problems in Puerto Rico for many, many years. treating the people of that country. They took it over during the Spanish-American War way back in the late 1800s. And, you know, the situation has gotten worse and worse all along for the people of Puerto Rico until they've gotten to the point where they can't stand it any longer. And today we see hundreds of thousands of people out in the streets of Puerto Rico demanding that the governor of Puerto Rico resign, and he should resign. And, you know, I think we got to look at the way the people of Puerto Rico are bringing down a very corrupt and incompetent government. And that, you know, we here in the United States got to look to maybe do the same thing with the Trump administration and these members of Congress who have, you know, are doing nothing to support the people here in this country and solve our problems. And they've only allowed the problems of the Puerto Rican people to get worse, too. And billions and millions and trillions of dollars are being spent on armaments and militarism and wars. This little action over there in Iran is costing us billions and billions of dollars. You know, that money could be going to make life better for people in Puerto Rico and people right here in the United States. And we've got to begin to look at things a little differently and begin to realize that people in other countries and people in Puerto Rico, you know, want better lives. And, you know, they don't want all this corruption and these incompetent politicians that hide behind, you know, saying that they're for democracy and everything when it's just the opposite. And you have the same thing in Hong Kong. Millions of people out in the streets, but for a much different reason. And the reason for the problems in Hong Kong stem from British colonialism and attempts to, you know, control the people there. And they're trying to make it look like the Chinese are responsible for the problems, and the Chinese aren't responsible for the problems in Hong Kong. I just heard Trump on television today, and he was asked about Hong Kong. And he says, well, I've had very little to do with Hong Kong, which is an admission on his part that he's really had a lot to do. Steve Bannon was in Hong Kong and helped us, you know, stir up this pot and this mess. And, you know, it's a terrible situation going on all over the world. We've got a real mess on our hands. And, you know, people all over the world are going to have to begin to examine their problems in a more realistic way and in a way that, you know, we can begin to reorder the priorities of, you know, all these countries. And people want to do that. And we've got people in power that are preventing that. So, you know.
Do you have any ideas or anything to say about Puerto Rico or Hong Kong, Devin?
No, I mean, I can't say that I do. I haven't really, unfortunately, followed either one of those countries too closely. What I will say, though, is that, you know, I'm sure it's just part and parcel of, like Alan said, what's going on all over the world. And I will say that there is an awakening. I mean, if you look around the world, what I would say is the common denominator is a strong return to nationalism. And I don't mean Trump's version of nationalism, but I think it's actually a response to what he calls nationalism, but still continues to you know, impart U.S. doctrine, U.S. policies on other countries. And so if you look around, I mean, especially even throughout Europe, there is, you know, we're seeing these, what were in the margins, these nationalist parties.
I don't know what to say at this point.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Okay. You know, tonight's program, we want to sort of focus on Israel and AIPAC and what's going on there in the Middle East. It relates a lot to Iran, I think, the situation mm-hmm. there. And I know, Devin, you've been very active in anti-AIPAC, the anti-AIPAC movement. And maybe you can explain a little bit about what AIPAC is and its impact on American politics and some of your opinions.
Okay, sure. I think everybody knows AIPAC is the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, and it is it's actually an umbrella. There are a lot of other smaller organizations that fall underneath it, but AIPAC is this conglomerate of tens of thousands of American Jews, American Christians. There's the John Hagee Christians United for Israel, and they essentially work to, it's not about American and Israel public affairs, because America doesn't get anything out of the deal. So it is essentially boils down to what is in the best interest of the Jewish state. And they have, and sure, there are other lobby groups, but this is a very powerful, if not one of the most powerful groups. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Can you hear me okay?
Keep going.
Okay.
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. It is the only lobby that controls our Congress, or really has the power to manipulate our Congress to put policies forth for a foreign state. And in my opinion, this is treasonous. So they do have sort of an oath, if for lack of a better word, that they get our Congress people to sign, and saying that they will stand behind Israel pretty much without question. And if the Congress doesn't sign it, AIPAC will go into full force and make sure these people either don't get elected or don't get reelected. And these people are determining our foreign policy.
Yeah, have you been paying attention to the Democratic Party candidates? I know the New York Times asked each one of them what their positions were on Israel. Were you paying attention to that?
Absolutely, on whether or not they feel Israel is following international law. And it's nauseating to watch them dance around it. Of course, nobody comes right out and says, yes, they do follow international law, because you can't. You certainly could not make that statement with a straight face. Now, neither does the U.S., but why are the taxpayer dollars? It's bad enough our taxpayer dollars are funding our own country that doesn't follow international law. Why are our tax dollars going to a foreign state, a foreign terrorist state?
Yeah, now, mm-hmm. I was just reading a column by Jeff Helper, who's an American that works in Israel with trying to stop the destruction of Palestinian homes. And Israel is right now involved in destroying like 70 Palestinian homes, maybe as much as 100.
Mm-hmm.
And
because they're built too close to the wall, to the apartheid wall. Meanwhile, the wall came after the homes were built.
Right.
I mean, it's just absurd. Under any other circumstances, if we were talking about anybody else, people would collapse into hysterics.
And all this money going into, I mean, we've seen, I don't know how many Palestinian youth and even doctors and nurses that have been wounded and killed by the Israelis. And, you know, one has to wonder how the United States government can continue to support this kind of barbarism in the name of democracy. It's something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they do it again because it's it's a completely compromised Congress, and it's not just under this administration. It's goes way back. It is a completely compromised, there have been a few that have tried to push back. I mean, Cynthia McKinney is one, and we saw what happened with her. You know, she did not sign that agreement, and, they put their money in play, and they got her out.
The Democrats have been real good at doing this. Going back to the end of World War II, Claude Pepper was very vocal in supporting a peace platform within the Democratic Party, and Harry Truman got rid of him real quick, just like the Democrats got rid of Cynthia McKinney.
Mm-hmm.
And, my opinion is that, you know, we need a third party in this country that's going to fight back against all of this and be very consistent in its anti-imperialist position and stuff. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I 100% agree. You know, if you think about what the old Democrats were, right? So the old Democrats were, you know, supposed to be for the workers. We were, you know, we were united. That's what united us. It didn't matter if we were black, white, gay, straight, you know, we were united as workers. And now I feel the Democrats are a bigger problem than the Republicans. You know, the Republicans are pretty much, I mean, we know where they stand. The Democrats, I feel, have divided us even worse. You know, so now we have all these subgroups. We have, you know, women's groups and gay groups and black and white and Muslim and Jew. And this has only served to divide everyone even further. Not to mention they've become even more compromised because they are the ones at this stage of the game that are, you know, pretty much dictating the vocabulary. So we can't even, we're not even allowed to discuss who our oppressor is. It's crazy. So yes, in answer to your question, a third party that is actually going to be way outside, not, you know, not being funded by the same, because if a third party comes in and they're essentially being funded by the same corporations, the same chunks of money, we're going to be right back where we started.
Yeah,
they're not going to go easily. Go ahead, sorry, go ahead.
The people in Canada found this out with their New Democratic Party, which is supposed to be a labor party and a party for peace and for socialism and everything. And yet the leadership of the NDP has apparently been bought off by, you know, Israel. And the people in Canada are getting very unhappy with the NDP because the NDP leadership has been supporting Israel and all their, you know, attacks on the Palestinian people. And they haven't even allowed resolutions to be openly debated in their party about the Palestinian issue. It's just like here. You know, I've known people in the Democratic Party that have tried to bring forward resolutions against what Israel is doing to the Palestinian people, and these people are literally driven out of the Democratic Party, and they're told that they can't bring forward resolutions like that. And even if the resolutions pass, and you know, some of the precinct caucuses and stuff, the Central Committee of the Democratic Party just pretends they don't even exist.
Yeah, it's shameful, and they need to be exposed. They need to be exposed at every turn because there's still people in this country that think the Democrats are better than the Republicans. In my opinion, they're far worse because, at least, like I said, with the Republicans, it's pretty clear about who they are. The Democrats have it veiled. I don't know that much about the Canadian politics, but I have been following the UK politics very closely, and that's exactly what's happening with Labour. You know, the Labour Party there was supposed to be the answer. They're turning out to be even worse. You know, they're fighting a huge battle. They're being attacked from every angle by these, you know, by these little groups. There's Jews for Labour, Jews for this. There's the campaign against anti-Semitism. And they are just destroying what is left of Labour. And the leader, Corbyn, doesn't have much of the backbone. You know, you spend your whole time defending yourself against that you're not anti-Semitic, that everyone else is getting neglected.
Yeah, I find it sort of ironic, really right-wing people like this Hagee with his Christians United for Israel and everything claim to be, you know, for Israel and the Jewish people, and Trump, oh, he just loves the Jewish people. But when you look at it, these people are really using the Jewish people, and they're the ones that are really the anti-Semitic people because they want to, you know, use Israel sort of a battering ram and to keep the Middle East open for the oil companies and everything. And they've created a serious situation where eventually the people in the Middle East, I don't think that they're going to put up with Israel at all. And they're really, you know, they claim to be friends of Israel and everything, these people, but they're not friends of Israel or the Jewish people. They're a bunch of hypocrites.
I will agree with you on most of it. The one thing I guess I don't agree with is that the Hagees and that sort are using Israel. I mean, I definitely think Israel is is pulling the strings. You're right. How these groups ever got together is quite mind-numbing, because especially if we're talking about the religious fundamentalists, mm-hmm. their goal is to get all the Jews to Israel so that when the second coming happens, the Jews are either going to accept Christ or they're going to perish. So on the one hand, it looks like Israelis and Jews are working with a group that's plotting their own demise. But if you look at it from, you know, outside of the religious aspect of it, I agree with you 100%. And this is a concern, I have. And it's, you know, I get called all sorts of things, a conspiracy theory, along with being an anti-Semite, which is hilarious to me. But I have people in my life that I love that are Jewish. And I am, you know, if you look back at history, Jewish history is disastrous. And it's, I see a lot of the same things being repeated. And if we can't talk about it, it only gets worse. It doesn't make people's feelings about it go away. They fester and they come back in really horrendous ways. So that when you know, finally everyone's back is against the wall, they don't seem, and this is just even looking back historically, people don't stop to separate good Jews from bad Jews. They just want them all out.
Yeah, you know, and it ends up, you know, Trump and all these people and Hagee and the right wing, that they want to make it so that there is an atmosphere where people aren't even free to discuss these issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look at the situation with the four members of Congress that have been speaking out on this issue and the way they're being treated by Trump and the media and these right wing organizations. I don't I assume you've been paying attention to
yes.
the way they've been treated.
Yes. Yes. And I don't, but the truth is they're not getting a whole lot of support from the left either. You know, they're being isolated because everyone, whether they're on the left or on the right, they're all jockeying for, you know, who loves Israel the most. So even a lot of the Democrats have turned their backs on them. And for saying the simplest, you know, most basic things like, you know, Palestinians deserve human rights. You know, this is enough to get you crucified.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They want to, you know, there's a genocide going on and they don't want to admit it. And
yeah.
they prevent the way that they attack people. They want to prevent people from getting at the bottom of you know, what's behind all of this, and it's not a good situation because it's leading to you know, an attack on democracy, and mm-hmm. it's getting to the point where, you know, they've battered people with this issue, and it's making it almost impossible to talk about other issues too at the same time.
Right. Exactly.
And now they've come in, Trump, with his racist attacks and his red baiting and anti-communism. And it's like, you know, these people want to, they know that they're wrong and they need to cover it up. And they're hiding behind racism now and anti-communism. And mm-hmm. their whole intent, though, is to prevent any kind of democratic dialogue on anything in this country.
Yeah, I agree. Freedom. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
You were at the demonstration against an APEC meeting. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what happened there.
Okay, so I think the last one I went to might have been 2 years ago, but I had gone to four consecutively up until that point, so they're pretty much the same. And, you know, they all convene, they meet, and the groups that stand outside. Actually, I didn't go with any groups. I always went as an independent. But it's always interesting. You meet, you know, a lot of the same people, and you can always count on the Netzarei Karta, the Hasidic Jews. They're wonderful, lovely people. They're always there. And we don't really interact so much with the people that are attending APAC. Occasionally they'll come out at the end. There have been some arguments, like a lot of yelling and screaming, but nobody actually really has any sort of a conversation. The last time I attended, I decided to go to the anti-APAC meeting, and it was, I managed to get a ticket. A friend had an extra ticket, so I went, and there were wonderful speakers there. Hanan Ashrawi was one, Ilan Pape was there, there were quite a few people. I don't remember the entire roster, but anyway, but what I took away from that, which was, and in fact, I wrote a piece about it. It might've been the very first piece I wrote when I, for my blog, was that what my takeaway was, while the speakers were all great and engaging, we talked about the past and the present. That's what they spoke about. That's what we heard. And everyone knows, well, maybe not everyone, but certainly the people that were in attendance had a pretty clear idea starting from the NACPA. And, but what we didn't talk about was the future. There was no plan for the future. And you can rest assured, APAC probably spent maybe, I don't know, 30 minutes to an hour talking about what had gone on the past year. But I guarantee you the rest of that weekend was laying their plans for the future. And if we can learn anything from them, that's it. We don't have a plan. And a lot of the reason why we don't have a plan is because we can't honestly, openly talk about what's taking place.
And like, was there much media coverage? Because unless, you know, I read some things that you wrote about the demonstrations against APEC, I would never have heard about there being any opposition in this country at the APEC meeting.
Absolutely zero. So there may be sometimes press TV shows up, so they might have been there. But all the cameras, all the important cameras were on the inside. There is never any mainstream media. And that's another reason that's part of the problem. I mean, our media is totally compromised. You know, even this is going off topic a little bit, but let's even just look at, granted it happened in the UK, but 12 Israelis are alleged to have raped this girl. I don't know if you've heard anything about this. There's no mention of it in the UK papers, and there's nothing mentioned about it here. She was in Cyprus. And, you know, whether they did or didn't do it remains to be seen, but there certainly something went down. And it was 12 Israeli boys, young, maybe 17, 18, on a 19-year-old British girl. And we don't, you know, we hear nothing about that in the West. If they had been Palestinians, 12 Palestinians, that would have been all over the U.S. press, also the U.K.
Yeah, you don't
so
hear anything.
Completely compromised. No, you want to know where I read it. You want to know what's happening in the world? Read Jewish press. I read Ynet. You can translate it if you go to the Hebrew version, but look at it on Google Chrome. Then you'll get it translated. They are far more open about what's happening. Even the Israeli crimes, like the bad behavior, they're much more open. There are things that I find in there regularly that have to deal with America that are not even in the New York Times. Look at the Jerusalem Post. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
There's a lot of opposition in Israel to Israeli policies that we do not hear about.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
There's been some massive demonstrations against the Israeli government by the Israeli people. And, you know, we don't hear about any of that. So it makes it hard for people to formulate an opinion here.
Of course. It's a completely controlled opinion. It's a manipulated opinion. Gideon Levy, who is a beautiful, beautiful writer, a wonderful man, lives in Israel. He's like one of the most hated men in Israel, writes regularly for Haaretz. So he's writing in a Jewish paper. They allow him to write there. He tries to come here and speak at Hofstra here in New York at a college. And, I mean, every Jewish group comes out of the woodwork to protest this guy and get him shut down and try and get the talks canceled. I mean, this is an educated man. This is not some guy who's stirring up hatred.
Yeah. A lot of Palestinians have tried to speak here in this country, and they're not even – if somebody rents a hall, the halls are canceled and they don't have a place
mm-hmm.
to speak. And this has been going on in this country for a long time now. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, the same thing in Canada. And I read an article about in Winnipeg, Manitoba – that a Palestinian, a woman from the United States who has been speaking out against injustices against the Palestinian people by the Israelis, she was denied the right to speak. They, you know, the right-wing Jewish community in Winnipeg just came down on the group that was sponsoring her and it was a fairly liberal group. They had invited her to speak to make a presentation about what was going on in the Middle East, and they wouldn't even allow her to speak. They wouldn't, for every place where they went to try and hire a hall, they denied her the right to be there. Finally, they found some place, but it was a much smaller meeting, and they made it so that people were even afraid to attend.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean, this
let
is
me
our
break
most
in
basic
here.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, and just say that you're listening to Left of Liberal with hosts Alan and Debbie Mackey. Look for us on our Facebook page. Look for the White Peace Poppy, because there are other Left of Liberals that we're not associated with. You can see listen to our show every Monday at 7 p.m. Central. Also, tune in Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Central for Stuart Alexander's 1 Hour Left. We're on that program too. Also consider joining his Facebook page, Socialist Can, Connection Action Network. Also, there is a meeting August 10th in Austin, Texas. The event is the first thing you come to on the Socialist Can page. If you're interested in coming, it'll be a roundtable discussion about social issues and the things that we need to do to make things better. If you can come, respond to the event and let us know so we know about how many people to plan on. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, that's going to be at the Live Oak Unitarian Church in Austin on August 10th from 8 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock in the evening. It's their first national meeting. I'm sort of curious, Devin, how were you treated by people that were going into the APEC meetings?
I mean, for the most part, honestly, they just go in. They're you know, there's not really any tension. I mean, everybody looks at each other and gives each other dirty looks. For the most part, they're walking in. We're on a, you know, we're in our little designated area. There was a, at one event I went to, I remember there was a lot of shouting on the steps, but nobody, there's nothing physical that breaks out, at least not at any of the ones that I've been to. And then occasionally there'll be maybe a one-on-one, a two-on-one, but nobody's really listening. They're, you know, everyone's yelling. They're kind of the APAC members are there to defend why Israel has a right to exist, even at the expense of the Palestinians. And of course, the Palestinians are supporters are there to tell them why they're not. And so, unfortunately, I think a conversation could be had. I do. It's just not necessarily in that forum. Not that way. It's not going to happen.
Well, these APEC meetings, what are they? Like a few dozen people, or hundreds of people, or thousands?
The APEC meetings are tens of thousands. Tens of thousands.
So,
yeah, it's massive, massive. And as far as how many Palestinian supporters show up, I would say I'm never really good at this, but I would say maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of 500, maybe 700. So it's a nice little collection of people, but nothing that, you know, that can compare. And there's certainly nobody, while presidents come there, you know, you have all these Congress people that are there. My Congressman Schumer is always front and center, you know, talking about his undying loyalty to the Jewish state. Nobody comes out and addresses the Palestinian supporters.
So what do you think is going to have to be done to get a dialogue going in this country?
I think we just have to do it. I think we just have to force it. We have to, you know, I have to admit, this is a lot of the reason why I've broken away even from activist groups. I mean, I still have some very close relationships with relationships that I forged through the quote unquote Palestinian movement. But even that's been sort of co-opted. You know, JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace, gets in there. And everyone get, you know, I'm not good when people tell me what I can and can't say. I don't want anyone telling me what my vocabulary has to be. I don't want to stay in safe perimeters. I want to say what I need to say. If I say something that's wrong, I'm not saying I'm perfect. If something is wrong, then okay, let's have a discussion about that. But I'm not going to, certainly not going to adhere to these boundaries of colonialism and apartheid. While those may be elements, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about ethnic cleansing, and we're talking about murder. So we can talk about whether or not, you know, even a Jewish state has the right to exist. That's something that will get you tagged in anti-Semite if you say it doesn't, because what they automatically put on you is that you're calling for, you know, the murder of Jews, no matter how many times you say it. So I think we have to just keep talking. No, you know, politicians certainly aren't going to give us the platform to do it.
No. How can people read your blog?
Oh, my blog. It's a very, very new blog, I should say. It's called musingabout.net. And I have, I think, maybe now 6 or 7 pieces on there.
Okay. You know, when we talk about the Palestinian and Israeli issue and, you know, Trump moving the U.S. embassy, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it's disgusting. I will say initially, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't really change what's happening on the ground. I think it's so idiotic for this man to think that he had, I mean, and all our other presidents have said they were going to do it. He's the one that actually did it. It's so absurd for an American president to tell another country what is going to be their capital. So he moved the embassy there. And what it did was, in my opinion, was absolutely proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that the U.S. has no capacity whatsoever to be an objective part of this, any sort of a peace resolution between these two factions, between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
What do you think about the position of Jimmy Carter on this whole issue?
I mean, I think, you know, I have to admit, I didn't read his book, but, and I know he made some huge mistakes as a president, some disastrous, I shouldn't say mistakes, I mean, disastrous mistakes that caused a whole lot of lives. But he has, you know, in his later years, he's been quite stunning in his discussion, and very open and very honest in his discussion about the Palestinian-Israeli issue. I think he's done a great job.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, people don't really give it much thought, but if you look at Jimmy Carter, if you look at Lyndon Johnson and his war in Vietnam, Johnson claimed he didn't want the war, and yet he was pushed into the war, and then he ended up, you know, towards the end of his life supporting George McGovern for president. And even though we had the same thing with Jimmy Carter that, you know, really did during his presidency, didn't really help the situation in the Middle East. And then after he gets out of office, he begins to speak what is apparently his real mind. You know, what is there about politics in this country where there's some kind of hold over these people where that they, even if they believe that what's right, they do what's wrong?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the power of lobbies. That's the power of, so it's essentially at this, certainly when we're talking about the Republicans or the Democrats, in the current state of our politics, whoever is in the White House really doesn't matter very much because it's who's controlling it. And that always seems to be the same players, whether it's, you know, bankers, it's, you know, it's finance, whoever is actually controlling it. Those are the policies that are going to be carried out. And my feeling is they've pretty much been compromised by the time we're down to our two candidates, because if you're not going to follow the rules, you're not going to get that far. That's why I had some hope in Bernie Sanders. My feeling was he was going to go as far as he could and then pull out and go third party. I think we all had this discussion way back then. If he would have pulled out, I would have supported him 100%. You know, then the Democrats ended up really sticking it to him, and he got behind Hillary. I mean, so now I have no faith in him whatsoever.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that and felt the same way. Mm-hmm. I think that if he was really serious, you know, he would run as a third party candidate because, mm-hmm. you know, all these people are backing him. They say they want to vote for him for president, but yet how do they vote for him for president if he's not on the ballot? And he's not going to be on the ballot as a Democrat. It's pretty obvious the Democrats aren't going to allow him to be their standard bearer.
Right.
And,
exactly.
I don't
and at
know,
that
so,
time, if he would have gone, at, you know, taken the muscle that he gained in when he was running as a Democrat and gone as an independent, my feeling was he would have had an absolute better chance of winning because then I could have gotten behind him, and I know a lot of other people that would have as well.
Yeah. What do you think the role of the military-industrial complex all of this is? Is AIPAC, you know, part of the military-industrial complex, do you think?
That's a good question. It's a good question, and I don't have the answer to it. I mean, maybe indirectly, they certainly have some power because the military-industrial complex is what's carrying out the foreign policy. So, they're controlling a lot of the foreign policy. They're controlling most of it. I mean, certainly these wars in the Middle East are not American wars. They're wars for Israel. Israel is the one benefiting the most. We're getting bled dry. We're losing American lives. And there's, you know, we can say what we want about our own government. The one government we're not allowed to talk about is Israel. So that tells me they're the ones pulling the strings. I mean, I can call my American president anything, but people are losing their jobs for criticizing Israel, not even Israeli citizens, just saying anything, you know, Israel and the power players. People lose their jobs.
Yeah, on the university campuses, professors and adjunct professors are almost, you know, they're really afraid to talk about the whole Middle East conflict and Israel and the Palestinian question.
It's astounding to me. In a country where our first right as Americans is freedom of speech, we can say what we want about our own government, but you better not say anything about the Jewish state. It's mind-numbing.
Yeah, I know a number of professors have lost their jobs because of that. And
mm-hmm. Down here, a couple contractors lost their jobs, too, because they wouldn't sign, what was an anti-BDS agreement?
Yeah.
Couple of the campuses. Yeah.
What do you think about the BDS movement?
I think BDS, I'm just not so big on movements, again, but I think there is a benefit to BDS. I do my very best to not buy Israeli goods, things that are made from the Dead Sea, whether it's avocados or almonds or all that stuff. What I am opposed to adamantly is boycotting any sort of academia or musical talent or like artists, things like that. I don't support that. I don't think it's a good idea. How are we ever going to have any sort of a conversation, especially academic? So yeah, I don't support people. Yeah, I want them to come. I want to talk. I'm not afraid of anybody, even the scariest, you know, most hardcore people. Come in, talk. If we have a difference of opinion, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had some really interesting conversations with hardcore Zionists. And they haven't tried to shut me down, and of course we don't agree, but at least I can have the conversation.
Yeah, that's important, that if people are willing to talk about the issues face-to-face with people. And I think we need a lot more of that. People have been way too timid. They've been intimidated, and they've become very timid and they won't speak out. But I've noticed even, you know, when you go shopping at a grocery store now, you know, you have people with all these samples, and you walk in and they're pushing Israeli products, like, you know, oranges and other things, and they make a big thing of, oh, these are products, you know, just in from Israel. And I've never noticed that so much in the past, but recently I think it's part of APEC's campaign to, you know, try and schmooze things over with the American people to, you know, because you think about it, right, in the grocery stores where everybody goes, and then you have, you know, all these little slices of oranges and stuff, and they're saying, you know, taste this orange, it's just in from Israel. And you don't see them saying, you know, hey, here's a product just in from Mexico, or, you know, this product is just in from Africa. You don't see that. But so I think that there's some kind of, you know, campaign going on to try and, you know, bring the whole American people into this supporting Israel and Israel's policies.
Wow, that's interesting. I haven't seen that. Not here in the grocery store. I haven't seen it. We get it in other ways. Here in New York, you probably get, we get a lot of body products, things like that. And the minute they say, you know, it contains Dead Sea salts, I leave a cloud of smoke. I tell them, no, thanks anyway. I don't buy Israeli products. What does that mean? It means I don't buy Israeli products. So, yeah. And then I leave a cloud of smoke. I wave goodbye. And that's the end of that. But wow, this is an interesting component. I have to admit, I might have to come grocery shop with you just for fun.
Well, and something else that's been happening down here right in Austin, a couple times in one of the big highways, I think it may be going near the airport, ICE is stopping people in, at certain checkpoints. Is any of that going on where you live?
No, not before the airport. And I live in New York City. And what are they, when they stop you, what do they say? Why are they stopping you?
Well, we don't know. We're just getting messages on Facebook that they're at a certain point, you know, on such and such road. And then we don't hear anything more about it. But, you know, it reminds you of what's going on in Israel and Palestine.
Yeah, in Palestine. Yeah. I mean, we have another aspect that we see. And so this is why this is a much bigger issue than just Israel. I mean, the Palestinian problem is maybe the most visible, but it's really good that you're sort of noticing this, Debbie, and we need to start keeping track of all of this stuff. So here, what we have in New York is we've got a lot of different Hasidic communities. One of the largest is Chabad Lubavitch, and that's our friend Jared Kushner. That's where he comes from. That's his tribe, for lack of a better word. They are Zionists, so they support the state of Israel. But most of the others do not. So the next largest, I believe, would be and I could be wrong about the numbers, but they are Satmar. They're called Satmar, Hasidic. And they're really an enormous crowd, and they're, in fact, one of the poorest. So they take huge amounts of money in government assistance. But there's a huge community here in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and this is, you know, I mean, Williamsburg is sort of prime property, really expensive, but on government assistance, they're living in, I guess it's East Williamsburg, so it's not Williamsburg proper. But upstate New York, there's a huge problem that's been going on for many years, and now we're seeing it spread to New Jersey. There are other communities. So they do move in blocks. They have to, you know, be able to walk to synagogue on Shabbos and all that. So they tend to move in enormous amounts of people. And they are one of the huge problems that we had in upstate New York was where the Satmar group annexed public land for Jewish only use. And this is a non-Zionist Jewish group. So they don't support the state of Israel, but we see the same behavior. And it was a huge, you know, obviously it was a huge fight that went on for a couple of years with the I don't want to say Gentile, but non, you know, maybe mostly Gentile, but also Jewish, but not Orthodox Jewish residents that had been there for, you know, generations they've been there. And they, you know, they weren't able to annex all the land they were looking for, but they certainly haven't given up. They got a part of it.
Well, there's a lot of things that are going on in Israel that are beginning to have reflections here in the United States. I know a number of the police departments have hired these Israeli security people that they use as consultants. And if there's, you know, like a 4th of July parade or something, these Israeli security consultants advise the police to have sharpshooters on roofs and stuff. And it's to condition the American people to accept this whole, you know, militarization and police state.
Yeah.
And they seem to model it on, you know, what's going on in Israel. And a number of politicians even, you know, praise Israel, the so-called security measures and stuff that Israel takes. And they're bringing that here to this country. And it's really a damper on democracy. You know, people know that, you know, here's these sharpshooters sitting on a roof. And, you know, what the heck is going on? They wonder, you know, and maybe we better just keep our mouths shut.
And that's happening where you live? You've seen them where you live? Oh,
yeah,
my God,
are
you kidding me, Alan?
The police here, a very crook and corrupt police chief who shouldn't even be in his position, brought in an Israeli security consultant to advise him on security measures. And like, there's not even a security problem in this area. There's, you know, there's never been any kind of, you know, shootings or anything else. And yet they make a big thing that they bring this, it's been in the papers and everything, that they bring this consultant from Israel in to advise the police on security issues. And, you know, it's all part of just getting people's mindset to accept this kind of, you know, anti-democratic atmosphere that they want to create.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know that that's been going on. Like, there have been several large cities. I know New York was one. I believe Detroit, or maybe it was Flint. There was the one boy that got shot by the police. Anyway, there have been some large cities that have brought in, you know, IDF specialists to train our police. Now, why on earth would you train police in military tactics?
Yeah.
And so this is new, though, what you're telling me about sharpshooters on the roof. I'm going to ask you, please, if you can, send me any articles you have about that.
Okay.
That might be my next blog. Yeah, that's astounding.
Yeah, where there's no problem, and they've purposely created an atmosphere where people are led to believe there might be a problem, and they accept this kind of thing, you know. And it's very dangerous. And, you know, our book club, our social justice book club, read the book, It Can Happen Here, and we discussed it. And it's like, you know, the book is about what we're living through today. And this whole atmosphere that's being created, and they use examples of Israel as examples of how security measures should be put in place here in this country. And
wow.
It's just creating fear in people. People don't want to speak out, and they think that if they say anything, especially about what Israel is doing in Palestine or anything, you know, they're going to be subjected to all kinds of harassment and intimidation. And, you know, most people don't want to subject themselves to that, so they keep their mouth shut and say nothing.
Yeah, which I get. I mean, I understand. People have to make a living, so, yeah, they can get ostracized by their friends. I mean, I've certainly lost friends. I've lost clients. It's not something that I typically discuss at work, but, you know, if a conversation comes up, I can't shy away from it. So I have lost clients. And it's what's frightening is, yeah, people are afraid. I understand why. It's logical, but it's happening right here.
Yeah.
Okay, it's happening in our own backyard. Yeah. And people will be quiet for so long. They'll be fearful for so long, but then they get angry. And you cannot legislate people's emotions.
Yeah. So what do you think should be things that people should be doing right now when it comes to, supporting the Palestinian people against what Israel is doing and the United States is doing there?
I guess I would say start, first of all, with educating yourself. You know, first and foremost, don't read what the newspapers print. In fact, you shouldn't read that. I mean, you can read that maybe after you understand what has really happened. There are a million documentaries on YouTube. They're still there. They haven't been taken down yet. So typically what I will do is Google something like, the truth about, and then whatever the topic is, and then you'll find some more obscure sources that don't necessarily have to follow a certain dialogue about it. They can speak more freely. You have to break away from mainstream media. So educate yourself on what's really happening there. And then ask yourself, is it, the fact that Jewish history is what it is should not in any way, shape, or form skew somebody's opinion about Palestine. Does that give them the right then to turn around and now do to the Palestinians what allegedly has been done to them? If that's the case, then actually the Palestinians are the last victims of Hitler, of World War II. Would they ever agree to living like the Palestinians? And then we have to figure out, I mean, we can't figure out anything. Certainly, I'm never going to be able to tell the Palestinians and the Israelis how they are going to live. But even if we just demand that they live, that the Israelis live and operate according to international law, that would certainly at least relieve some of the initial pain. It doesn't completely make up for it. And we have to vote our politicians out. We have to get them out. And I know it sounds like a nice thing to say. Well, how do you do it? You stop voting for them. It's that simple.
Yeah.
Because voting for them, is only complicity in a completely broken, corrupt system.
If you were to, what are a couple of books that you would suggest that people read?
A couple of books. I love Edward Said's book, and I feel like he didn't even really go far enough, but A Question of Palestine, that was the book that changed my life. So I would say start there. There are probably many others, my goodness, now I can't think. It's funny, I've gotten much more into actual, like, reading about Jewish history and things like that, because over the years, I've read so many. So I would... That would be, if I have to make one suggestion, I would say read A Question of Palestine by Edward Said.
And tell us again how to get to your blog.
It's called musingabout.net, M like Mary, U-S-I-N-G, musingabout.net.
Okay. And that we're coming to the end of the show here, so we want to thank you for coming on, and we've enjoyed talking to you. And,
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, and we'll have you on again. We've enjoyed it. Anyway, I guess that's the end of our program, and good night.
Yep, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being on the program, Devon.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.